Our Dukes and Bell. We start off every day and every hour by saying,
hey, man.
It's good to have you listening. We're hanging out at Twin Peaks in Buckhead. We were just talking amongst ourselves about a variety of things. We're going to talk plenty of Falcons here, and also we'll get to our Friday Five. Today it's kind of a fun question, man. And on Fridays we do the Friday Five. Five players you look forward to see play the most after being drafted. Not Falcons, just across the board. They got drafted. And you got excited about the chance to see them play for the first time. We'll tell you our five coming up. That's on the way. And also our strong arm story of the day. Let's start first with Abe, the position you are focused on. Because we got into this conversation earlier today. And look, the combine going on. Look, sometimes guys can have amazing numbers in this combine. Maybe it changes how you feel. Like, you might be thinking, all right, we got to go corner. You're watching the corners, and then all of a sudden one of these big DTs yesterday runs a great 40 time, quick on the shuttle drill, and then all of a sudden you say, well, he's way more of an athlete than we thought. Maybe we should be thinking about this. Guys, those conversations are going on at the combine. I'm not telling you they've already made up their mind, but I do think sometimes these positions, Abe, it goes back and forth. You're going, we need a wide receiver. They're going to work out this weekend. You're like, okay. Somebody's going to, you know, have you interested maybe just a little bit more with what they do on the field. What position do you think we should be interested in the most?
Just real quick, and then the other aspect is there are going to be guys you didn't think would be there.
True.
On draft day. That make you reassess, oh, I thought we were going to be in the groups of these two or three players or vice versa. You know, I look at the Falcons right now, and it's an interesting discussion. This year's all about the quarterback, right?
Okay, yes.
Right? We're just it's okay to admit that whoever it's going to be, whenever it's going to be, this year's all about the quarterback.
It is.
And so I think with the top pick, whether that stays at 48 in the second round or that's moved around, I think you're doing something to help out the quarterback.
Okay.
Now, it's twofold. Receiver, because I think we all are kind of feeling like a split with Darnell Mooney it might be there. We obviously weren't good enough in a receiving core with Pitts and London, although their ability to play together is a question, you need more than just them. And so I think receiver is up for debate. And then I'll be honest, it might even be a bigger impact to the quarterback. Give me a better signal caller of the offensive line. I think you can upgrade at center.
Okay.
And I think that, I know drafting centers early isn't the most hip thing to do, but I think you stay at 48. I don't think that's crazy early for a guy, rookie center, to be drafted and expected to start. And so I wonder if you look at not just the offensive line, but specifically the center position there.
You bring up a very interesting point. It's Dukes and Bell. Mike's off today. Abe's in, hanging out at Twin Peaks and Buckhead. Guys, the reason why this is interesting is because we have a new offensive line coach who knows exactly what he wants to do.
Good point.
Coach Callahan is not coming in here wondering about whether this works or this doesn't. We're talking about a 30-year vet in the National Football League who is considered to be the GOAT when you start talking about offensive line. What he's going to want, in my opinion, is bigger, more skilled, and being able to run power football, but also being able to run zone. To your point, I don't disagree with you, Abe. We've not discussed this a whole lot because, to your point, it's not sexy. But look, there's a kid at Florida. His name's Jake Slaughter. He's considered to be the top center in this draft. He might be the 80th prospect in this draft.
Right.
So when you do that, people will automatically say Falcons are reaching. Why would you take potentially the 80th prospect at 48? This is where the need versus best player available thing comes into play.
Okay,
where general managers lie and say we're going to take the best player available.
Because I can find the quote that Ian Cunningham told Andy and Randy.
And when in actuality, this is a need. Mm-hmm. It will help your quarterback. It will help your run game. It improves your offensive line. And we know this, Atlanta, if you've been here for a while, Mike and I clamored in 2014, 2015 to go get a center to help Matt Ryan. They did. Mm-hmm. And we went to the Super Bowl. This is not out of the question. It's not out of the realm of possibility. And I just think, to your point, people, Falcon fans will be like, man, are you serious, a center? And I use Slaughter because he's 6'4", 300 plus.
Yeah.
That's the kind of guy you're talking about.
Let me make the other argument here. If we're looking at the offense, and I think the debate, if you are going offense, is between wide receiver and center, in my opinion. Which would be easier to find in free agency versus the draft?
Ooh.
A wide receiver,
yes,
who's probably your third option.
Yes.
Not your second option. With Pitts, he's your third option.
Okay.
Versus a center that can start day one. In free agency, you're more likely to find, in my opinion,
yeah,
that receiver who can stretch the field. I mean, the Seahawks acquired Rashid Shaheed at the trade deadline. That guy's a free agent right now.
Yeah.
Or he's probably trending towards being a free agent,
he will
I
be.
Believe.
No, he will be.
And so when I look at what I can get in free agency or via trade versus what I can get in the draft, I almost talk myself out of receiver if you think center is a bigger need, because I think that is more likely to get, and I know the Commanders just cut their center and the Titans are getting rid of Cushenberry.
Yep.
And so there are going to be some names out there potentially. I'll take my chance with the receiver, paying a guy, and center drafting him.
404-726-0929. You can let us know what you think. And that's why this is going to be very interesting to see. There's no for sure with the Falcons. You can tell me we need a DT. We do. You can tell me we need a corner. We do. Do I want a receiver that takes the top off? Yeah. To complement Drake London and really help our quarterback down the field? I do. But if they went this route, I'm not going to be upset, because I understand this is the nuts and bolts, man. And if you're talking about keeping Michael Penix up, Mike, Abe, and keeping him healthy,
yeah,
to me, that's the most important thing.
The other thing is, you say you're not going to be upset.
I'm not.
This is I'm with you. This is the first new regime.
Yeah.
Trying to build this team in the way that they prefer, with coaches who are directing them one way or the other. Like you said, Callahan knows what he wants, and Stefanski's going to know what he wants and all that. I'm not going to be mad in the middle of the second round at them taking whatever position they think is needed. If I want to get mad in the top 10 or in 12 because we're clearly, very obviously skipping a need in favor of this or that, I can understand that. Honestly, everything at that part of the draft is a maybe, maybe not. Everything. You're not getting a sure thing Caleb Downs in the middle 40s, right? Everything is maybe it hits, maybe it doesn't. You obviously hope it hits, but I'm not going to get mad one way or the other based on wherever they go, because I think it's too big of a toss-up anyways.
Yeah. Look, yes, this is not in our face. If we don't take this guy, we screwed it up.
There's no name that – how can you not take this guy there? We've had that before and not taken that guy.
Yeah, and that's why I'm saying I would not be mad.
Yeah.
Here's another thing, too, as we talk about the Falcons. And by the way, the salary cap is going to top $300 million. The numbers dropped today for the first time. It's going to be $301.2 million. That's what teams will be able to spend. That is the number you won't be able to go over. Obviously, there are taxes involved, but it's a $22 million increase over last year. $22 million. This just tells you how thriving and how healthy the NFL is when it comes to the finances and the revenue. The cap has increased 40% in just 3 years. Guys, I will tell you right now, you guys are listening, your business has not increased 40% over the last 3 years or 5 years. There's very few businesses that have in this day and age. This is the one that just continues to grow. The good news is, as the cap goes up, it helps us as Falcon fans, because that means the Falcons, from a financial standpoint, will have a little bit more leeway. And I mention this only because of what it means for Kyle Pitts,
yeah,
and what that number is going to be.
Yeah, his cap number, which was – we knew it was suggested over $15 million, but some had said as many as 16 to 17, maybe even as high as $18 million. It's going to be way less than that. It's just over $15 million at $15.045 million, so $15,045,000 on that franchise tag.
Wide receivers are going to have the second most lucrative franchise tag. You tag your wide receiver like the Cowboys with Pickens, $27.3 million. Quarterback tag now, again, top five salaries of the five highest paid guys is $43.9 million.
That's actually lower than I thought.
It is for me as well.
I'm going to be honest.
I agree, but if you're going to tag your quarterback, and there are a couple of teams that may be in this position, it doesn't happen a whole lot. We saw Kirk Cousins happen twice in a row back in the day, but that's the guaranteed money for your quarterback. Here's another thing I want to bring up. It's Dukes and Bell, guys, talking Falcons. Also, Friday 5 is on the way. I need Ian Cunningham. Abe, and you tell me what you think about it. I need Ian Cunningham to be cutthroat, man. Understand what I'm saying. We keep talking about players like Tyler Allgeier, right? It's not that you don't like them. It's not that you don't think they're good players. But you got to do what's right for the team. You got to do what's right for the future. And when I keep hearing people like, you know, Tyler Allgeier, okay, so 3 years, $22 million potentially to get Allgeier back. I'm not doing that when I know I've got Bijan looming. I am the whole Caden Ellis thing.
I was going to bring that up. You don't think Ian Cunningham's comment on Caden was cutthroat? Because I kind of think it was.
I do, and yeah. This is what I'm saying. Yeah. I like what he said. Like, it's a good linebacker market. Like, I'm not going to be so committed that I am caught up and put into a corner where now we're forced to, like, oh, we got to bring him back. I love Caden Ellis. Super dude. Led the team in tackles for the last 3 years. Can we upgrade?
Yeah, there was also a flexing of power in that comment because obviously Ian Cunningham knew and saw what Jeff Olbrich said about him.
Yes.
And he said, cool, I hear you. It's not exactly going to go like that. So there was a little bit of flexing the muscle in that comment as well on paper. Now, we'll see ultimately what happens
sure.
if you end up bringing him back in. And I mentioned this to you behind the curtain earlier today. There also might be a little bit of give and take of like, hey, we're not going to draft defense. It is going to be a center or it is going to be a receiver, and so maybe we'll throw you a bone and we will bring Caden back. And that's how it's going to work with you not getting a defensive player in the first two rounds of the draft.
Yeah.
Maybe you get it there.
It's very possible. I only say that to say what I've heard from him so far, I like.
Sure.
And I'm talking about Ian Cunningham. He's not put himself in a situation where he is totally committed to a player, a situation, or a thing. And that's what I need from my general
manager. But ultimately, actions will always speak louder than
Absolutely.
Words. So you can hear it one way. We need to see it still.
Absolutely. Yeah. And that's why the draft matters. That's why free agency matters. You guys can let us know what you think. I'll give you another example. Darnell Mooney, guys.
He's gotta go.
This is a no-brainer.
The money's too much.
It's a no-brainer.
You save too much.
This idea like, well, you know, we don't have anybody in the receiving room. Who cares? I'm saving $12 million coming off of a season where a guy didn't help me.
Yeah.
That to me is where this general manager is living right now. We'll see what he does and how he goes about his business, but I do think that's important. 404-726-0929 as we talk Falcons. Also, as we've been discussing today and at the Combine, guys, the interesting thing is there is no set direction. There are teams where you know where they might go. There's really no set direction right now for us. And that's why we're talking about all these different positions. I know some of you are like, well, we should be locked in on this, that, and the other. There are certain teams that are going into this draft, as we have in the years past, where you have a specific thing that you need to go get. When you've got multiple things, it truly is going to be who the hell's on the board when we draft. It really is.
Yeah, and it's so tough because you just can't predict. Like, even when you have multiple things and you're drafting 12 or 14, there are lines where teams are going to take. But when you're as deep into the second round as you are and you don't know what that run is going to be late in the first round, which then impacts the start of day two in the second round, you better have a lot of names on that big board.
Coming up, Friday 5. What are we talking about today? We'll go around the room and share. It's a very fun Friday 5 today. Stay there. We'll tell you about it next. Sports Radio 92.9 The Game. Dukes and Bell, Abe Gordon in for Mike. Happy Friday, everybody, as we have made it towards the weekend. Coming up, we'll get to the strong arm story of the day. We're having some fun right now, though, because we do our Friday 5, and Day-Day, I want to bring you into the conversation because I need you to tell everybody what we're talking about today and what is today's Friday 5.
Yes, so as we, check out the Combine, what are we now? Day 3,
yes,
right?
Yes.
Day 3? No, day 2.
Day 2 of
workouts.
Day 2
of workouts. It got me to thinking about, you know, just all the different players over the years that you may have been excited about looking forward towards their rookie debuts once they were drafted. So that is the Friday 5. NFL players you were excited to see make their rookie debuts.
All right. And we're going to go around the room. Abe said he's got his list together. So we'll start there. Abe, tell me who you got on your list, bro.
You want me to go all five or one at a time?
You can go one at a time. We'll discuss, or you can go all through all five.
The first name I wrote down was Chris Johnson.
Ooh.
And obviously, broke and set at the time the combine record. Went on to become CJ2K. But you know, coming from a smaller school, I always love the guys that come from smaller schools that you may not have seen play. But especially, like, if I caught, you know, I probably caught Chris Johnson, like, two or three times, right, on, like, a Tuesday night or a Wednesday night on ESPN2. And then you're like, boy, this guy gets in the league.
He's going to be a problem.
And he was.
He's going to be a problem. He was so fast. I think he ran 4.2, if I remember correctly.
He had the record for a long time.
4.2.4, maybe? 4.2.2?
Yeah.
No, 4.2.2 is not.
I think his record is still – isn't his still held?
No, he's a 4.2.6. Broke at a 4.2.1.
Yeah, I think Chris is like –
Oh, John Ross ran 4.2.2. That's right. John Ross ran 4.2.2.
Yeah, that's crazy. And I'm with you. Chris had a really good career, played with the Titans. Day-Day, you have one you want to give right here?
Yeah, I'll start off, and my list is slightly biased just because of growing up on the West Coast.
So okay.
You'll notice the trend with mine.
All
my
right.
First one is going to be Keyshawn Johnson. Watching USC football.
Keyshawn was a beast, man.
He was a beast. And again, growing up, you know, going to high school on the West Coast, I watched a lot of, obviously, USC, UCLA football. And then it transcended. It went with him into the pros as well. I mean, he was a great wide receiver professionally. So, yeah, just growing up watching him, he was definitely one. I couldn't wait to see how he'd do. Didn't like the fact that he's going to the Jets.
Yeah.
But,
yeah. Didn't he write a book, Throw Me the Damn Ball? Wasn't that Keyshawn? That
they threw me the damn ball,
Yeah. God, man, Keyshawn in college coming out of USC.
And
again, when you start talking about wide receivers being the first overall pick and all, like that's a different animal. Yeah. Look, for me, it was Randy Moss. The hype surrounding Randy Moss coming out of Marshall. And for those who don't know the Randy Moss story, could have gone pretty much anywhere in the country, right?
Was at FSU for a minute.
Correct. Was at FSU, ends up at Marshall, crushes it.
Yep.
Nobody can defend him. And you're going, well, he ain't going to be this good in the NFL. And he was. His debut, the anticipation of, like, can he do what we've seen him do in college? That's one of the guys that I just absolutely – the anticipation was off the charts for me. And Randy Moss obviously turned out to be one of the greatest of all time. Oh, you got one for us?
I got Moss on my list. So I'll talk about him later. But, no, the first one for me, like, his seniors last year, you saw so many of his games on TV, and you saw him what he did on the basketball court. So you knew he was special there, but watching Julius Peppers play football, the size and speed combination. If I'm not mistaken, like the first game his junior year or his draft eligible year, he ran a pick back. And you're like, this guy is 6'6", 273, and he just outran an entire offense and took a ball back on the interception, which is unreal for me to see that at that point. So, yeah, it was Julius Peppers.
Yeah, different animal. All right, we're talking about – it's our Friday Five, guys. Five debuts, all right? That we were looking forward to, and all of us have different players that we're talking about. Abe, who else is on your list?
Yeah, I tried to base mine mostly on something they did at the combine. We're at the combine now, and so I did a lot of combine workout warriors. Vernon Davis had one of the all-times.
Oh,
Vernon Davis had one of the all-time combine performances.
Yeah.
And so he made my list of, like, man, this guy's a total freak. I can't wait to see what he does on the field.
Yeah,
that's a really good one. Look. I think sometimes it gets lost. When Cam Newton came into the league,
different
guys, he threw for 422 yards in his debut.
Different.
Two touchdowns. He's coming off the Heisman and the national championship. He's the number one pick. And then you go, well, he ain't going to be that good.
Right.
And he comes in and crushes it his first game. And look, we say this all the time. Cam was different. And Cam's from Atlanta. If you've ever seen Cam out, he ain't a small dude. Like, you're not walking up on a guy like that 6 foot, you know, and barely 200 pounds. So to see him do what he did once he got to the league and then was a dominant force for a decade, obviously was an MVP and led them to a Super Bowl. We're talking about the Carolina Panthers. Cam Newton, man, I was like, this can he be this damn good in the NFL? And he was. Day-Day?
Next one for me is going to be Marshall Faulk. So I went to high school with two players, or two of my good friends, Peter Faulk, Fred Edwards. They were actually recruited and played with Marshall. So watching them whenever I could watch them, I got a chance to see Marshall Faulk a lot. And kind of to Abe's point, you know, San Diego State wasn't on a whole lot of TVs back then.
True.
But because I was, you know, seeking out so I could see my friends play, I got to watch him a lot. And like Abe said about with Chris, it was just like, yo, this dude is nasty. Yeah. And he proved it. He proved it, man.
Marshall Faulk, by the way, one of the nicest guys you ever meet.
Yeah.
Early in his career.
Coaching now, too,
I think. Yeah, I got a chance. He used to do an annual golf tournament, and I got a chance to go for the first probably 3 or 4 years. Just a cool dude, man. One of the nicest guys. And then, you know, you talk about, like, Bijan and McCaffrey. You got to go back to Marshall.
Yeah.
You got to go back and see the things that he was doing on the football field. What do you got, man? Who else is on your list?
All righty. Just give you some numbers here. Just because Abe's talking combine here. 4.39 40 and 11.3 broad jump, which still is one of the highest for the position ever. And he did it with a damn broken foot. At 6'2", 220, Julio Jones. His combine performance is legendary, dude.
Wow.
Legendary. Yeah, I had him on my list as well for the exact same reason.
Broken foot.
I forgot about that, guys. Because I had him on the same reason.
To do the combine workout he did, and then later we didn't know. He may have known, but we didn't know that it later came out he did all that on a broken foot. So he was on my list as well.
That's crazy. Yeah, I think Julio's referenced that a couple of times. Like, I ran 4.2 on a broke foot.
Sure did.
Like he's referenced that a couple of times. There's
video evidence of that, yes.
Yeah, man. It's Dukes and Bell, guys. Were you a LaDainian Tomlinson fan? Were you an LT fan out there?
Oh, yeah.
Okay, just out of curiosity.
Yeah.
I didn't know. I was curious if you were. Who else you got, Day-Day? Let's get to it.
This one's close to home, and this one's because when I first started covering high school sports, he was one of the first players I got to see go play at a high level collegiately and then go on into the NFL. A.J. Terrell.
Ooh, right here
out of Westlake. My daughter went to Westlake as well. So at the time, again, when I first started Prep Sports,
that was a guy that I was looking forward to seeing his debut. Who else you got on your list, Dave?
Yeah, I'll run through the final two again. Combine workout warrior, Stephen Paella, when he put up that bench press.
52 or 53 times he did it or something like that?
Whatever it was second most of all time behind some legendary.
52 times?
Well, yeah, dude, it was nuts. It was nuts. And I understand he's a big dude and he's pushing a lot of mass around, but I was like, this guy's going to step on the field and just toss some center.
Oh, yeah.
Some poor center right into the quarterback.
49 is the record that he had 49 times.
Yeah. And then the other one for me, just as I wrap up my Friday Five, little bit of favoritism here, Florida running back Chris Rainey. He was on the championship teams there with Tebow, and he was nasty. And I just thought when he got in the league, he'd be as nasty. He had a couple good games for the Steelers, kind of flamed out, had some legal stuff. But I remember thinking, this guy's going to get into the open field to make some NFLers look dumb.
It's a good point. And I'll throw one more in there for me while you're talking about guys from a college standpoint. Look, there was no one more hype coming out at the time than Vince Young.
He's on my list.
Yeah.
Coming out.
He's on my list.
After the national championship game, man. And look, everybody at Texas is like, this dude's going to own the NFL. He's going to win Super Bowls, blah, blah, blah. Gets drafted by the Tennessee Titans. I think it was third overall, if I remember correctly. Mm-hmm. But the point is, you know, that watching him in college, he was the best player for 2 years in college football.
Yeah.
People forget about his junior year, where they went to the Rose Bowl and won. I think they beat Michigan. We beat Michigan. And then the next year was obviously the USC year. He was the best player.
Well, everyone thinks he's got a Heisman. That's how good he was.
He does. That's right.
It was Reggie.
That's right.
Yeah.
That's right.
And you can put Reggie Bush in that discussion, too, about what they did. Yeah.
So Reggie and Vince both on my list.
Oh, Reggie was something else.
The game against Fresno State was the dumbest thing I've ever
seen. 500 and what? 500 yards of total offense?
It's like 545.
The punt return where he goes one side of the field. Literally to
wasn't
the other side of the field.
Where he dives from like the 7 yard line or something, if I remember. I mean, like, yeah, Reggie was different, man.
He really was.
Reggie Bush was different. It's Dukes and Bell. That's our Friday Five, man. We have fun with it. We do it every week. We come up with different things. And this is a fun one because with the combine, there will be debuts that we can't wait to see once we get back to the season. Guys get drafted and you go, what's this guy going to be? All right, we're coming back. Strong Arm Story of the Day is next. We're live at Twin Peaks. We're going to talk about our Hawks. Jonathan Kuminga making an impression. But before we do, at the Combine, as we're coming to you live from Twin Peaks in Buckhead, Abe's in for Mike today. Fernando Mendoza, Abe, says that Tom Brady was on the phone when he walked in for his formal interview with the team at the Combine. It makes you think that Tom Brady, whether we believe he is or isn't, John Spytek is the GM, but he's calling the shots. He's on the phone, and Fernando talked about it at the Combine, saying it's a, quote, very special interaction with team minority owner Tom Brady. Look, you don't get Brady on the phone to sell a potential guy on coming to the Raiders. I think that is a lot more about Brady being in on the interview process and hearing what's going on and kind of picking his brain. But does that mean anything to you? He says, I mean, quote, who hasn't admired Tom Brady? He talks about the opportunity to meet him in person would be fantastic. But he goes on to say it was a very special interaction as Brady was on the phone with the Raiders in that interview.
I'll tell you why I have to caveat this whole conversation, and that is because they're talking about a quarterback.
Okay.
And I think it would only make sense for Brady to be involved. If this was a discussion between David Bailey or Sonny Styles, is Tom Brady involving himself? And that's where I'm at. That's kind of where I pull back on the let's not overreact to Tom Brady being involved here. It's quarterback to quarterback, and I think it makes sense that he would be. I'd be very concerned if I were like John Spytek or someone else, even a fan of the Raiders, if it were this guy talking about defensive prospects or something like that. The fact that it's a quarterback, I think I can calm down a little bit and understand it a bit more, right?
Yeah, look, and this to me is a no-brainer. We've said it. Whether you think he's going to be great in the NFL, we'll wait to see. But Mendoza's the top of the guy. He's the guy at the top of the list. Ty Simpson today was talking to the media, trying to pump himself up, saying, hey, I'm the best guy here. It's what guys do. Diego Pavi, I brought up earlier.
He's not the best guy there. Let me help you out.
Abe was like, I'm not drafting this guy. He's 5'10". Diego Pavi was like, I'm the best guy here. This is what quarterbacks do. But Fernando Mendoza, this last college season proved it. And you said it, stepped up in big moments. Yeah. I don't think this is going to be that hard for the Raiders. They're in need of a quarterback. This is the first time in a very long time where they've had the number one overall pick. I think Mendoza, that's the no-brainer to me on draft night.
Let me ask you the real question about whether this boils down to whether he's a good number one overall draft pick. How good does he have to be at quarterback to justify the number one overall pick? Because I don't think Fernando Mendoza is ever going to be one of the six best quarterbacks in the NFL.
I would agree.
Can you still justify him at seven? Does it? You see what I'm saying?
Yeah.
He may not be one of the 10 best quarterbacks ever.
So let me ask you this, because it's a valid question. When you talk about Sam Darnold, who by the way was a top pick for the Jets, Sam Darnold just won a Super Bowl. Turned it over more than anybody else, right? When you go look at the turnovers this year,
regular season,
was he special? Was he elite during this playoff run? What he didn't do is he didn't make mistakes.
Sure.
Defense was outstanding. And all of a sudden you find yourself in a Super Bowl and you win it. Are the Raiders thinking the same way with Mendoza? Like, my point is, if you're saying Mendoza has to be the guy, he's got to be the number one guy 4 years from now, and if we're not talking about Mendoza at the top of the list and it's not Patrick Mahomes or Lamar or Josh, right, they won't win a Super Bowl. I don't think so. I disagree. I feel the same way about Michael Penix. I think if you put the necessary things around Penix, he doesn't make mistakes. You can go to a Super Bowl.
I think the Seahawks have opened up a little bit of a secondary path to putting a complete team together, and that is that you don't have to have one of the seven best quarterbacks in the league to win. You can't have one of the seven worst, but you need a guy that can make the plays that he needs to be making, let other guys – I mean, even the Patriots, they didn't rely on Drake May at all the entire playoffs.
They didn't. They really didn't.
And they got all the way to the Super Bowl doing that. And so – I think you look at it and say something like, hey, this is a guy that we think is somewhere between the 10th and 12th best quarterback in the NFL, and if we put him with the right talent around him, then you could be in good shape. And they're off to a good start offensively. They need a little bit better on the line, obviously, but between Brock Bowers and Ashton Jeanty, and you add a couple pieces here and there in the offseason, you're off to a good start.
This quote coming in from Gunner Stockton, but Carson Beck. I just want to read it because we've spent a lot of time on this show talking about the relationship between Carson Beck and Kirby Smart. Now, I've said all along, I think Kirby called him in at the end of that season when Beck left and said, you need to go somewhere. I don't think this was Carson Beck's decision. But today at the Combine, we're talking about quarterbacks, Carson Beck said it was Gunner's turn to be the quarterback at the University of Georgia. When I decided to come back to college, I had to go elsewhere. There's no bad blood. I'm not even sure where that comes from. I love the University of Georgia. I love Kirby Smart. So, again, that is Carson
Beck. It comes
Beck.
From the fact that you had an okay season. Because if he had gone to Miami and they had looked terrible, he had looked terrible, he'd be down draft stock and all that, I don't think he'd be saying this. I think you have the hindsight now, you get to say this because you went to the national championship game, yeah. You performed well, you raised your draft stock, all of those things, and then you can look back and say, hey, look, it worked out for Gunner, it worked out for me, and here we are, there's no bad blood. I think if it had gotten to a point where he had a real bad year
so you're telling
in Miami.
Me, so he would have came out and said, I got forced out of Georgia. They pushed me out the door.
I don't know if he says that directly, but I think the narrative shifts.
Yeah. That's the first time he said anything about
All right, because I have my own theory. Let's say Virginia wins the ACC title game. Virginia goes to the playoffs. I don't think Miami gets in. That's my tit for tat. I think they're only taking one ACC team. I think Notre Dame would have been in.
Oh,
Miami,
I agree.
All that stuff.
Yeah, one.
So he never gets to the playoffs. He never leads them to the championship game. Never comes just short. Throws a pick in the final minute. Carson Beck's thing. You think he's still having the same conversation?
You don't think he's saying, I love Georgia, I love Kirby Smart, no bad blood?
Did you hear yourself reading it? It was his time?
That's what he said.
No quarterback one says that.
He got forced out.
Of course he did. We know that. He knows that. Everyone knows that.
He got kicked out.
But it worked out in the end, which is why he can be buddy-buddy about it.
Okay. All right. He's trying to make it seem like
he stepped aside?
Yes. Yes, that's what he said.
Oh, after you, sir.
That's exactly what he's making
it
seem
like.
Yeah, I don't think so. I don't either.
I don't think so.
I don't either. By the way, where's he at on your board? Where's Carson Beck?
Dude, anyone could be three. Honestly, anyone could be three. I do think Ty Simpson is probably QB2.
I do, too.
I do think Trinidad Chambliss screwed up. He probably should be QB3. And I know he's got some height concerns as well. Anyone could be QB3, and that includes Carson Beck. It's not going to be in the first round.
I don't think so either. I think he's going to be a late
may
second.
Not even, I would say it may not even be in the second. You may go two quarterbacks in round one and none in round two. You might. Teams get desperate, so someone probably goes. Like Cade Klubnik, Drew Aller, Carson Beck.
Yeah.
Like
Nussmeier. That's
sure.
Right, LSU. That's right.
Have fun.
Yeah. Well, all these guys we were talking about the damn Heisman before the season started. And then they all fell off, literally, except Carson Beck. I mean, he did have a really good year, to Abe's point. All right, it's Dukes and Bell. Before we get out of here real quick, I just want to get your thoughts on Kuminga. Hawks back in action Sunday.
Give me more.
Against Portland. His debut was off the chain last night. 17, I think, in 7 or 8.
I'm more impressed with last night. Let me tell you why.
Why?
I think he played smart and under control. And I think it's easy to shoot when you're hot. I think he was efficient. I think he did some things that showed out in the scorebook a little bit differently than just points. He also was smart enough to say, hey, my man Corey Kispert is
hot. Yeah.
So let's feed him the ball. And same thing with C.J. McCollum. Those two combined for over 50 points, 55s, 56 points, whatever it was. I think part of playing the role that Kuminga is going to have to play on certain nights, because I think if you're Kuminga, there's an easy step to saying, boy, Jalen's out, Nikhil's out, this is my night. It doesn't need to be when other guys have it going. Don't take that away from them, and he didn't. He was wise enough, understood what was going on in the moment enough to play the role they needed him to play that night in a game where they were missing their two best scorers, essentially, in Nikhil Alexander-Walker and certainly Jalen Johnson. It looked mature. It looked smart. It looked like a good teammate, which obviously is not the vibes we had been getting out of Golden State. And so, to me, it says very good things. It's only two games, so
right.
I understand
right,
that.
Right.
But it says very good things about the potential for him being a core piece, growing with this team under Quinn Snyder and remaining here for more than just the 20 games remaining in the season.
The question for me with Kuminga was, are they going to use him in the right way? Look, the three-pointers he hit the other night, and I think Brian Oliver, who came on our show, said, I'm not sure if that's who he is. When you're hot, you're feeling it.
Right, sure.
You shoot him. That's not his game. His game is slash, yep, cut, let me get to the
wing
rack,
play,
transition. Yeah. And my thing is, how does Quinn Snyder incorporate him to get him involved in the offense instead of just give it to Kuminga, let's go one-on-one?
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
That's not going to work. So I'm with you. I thought last night was really good. I like what I'm seeing. And there's just a lot of upside. That's the thing.
Yeah.
Like when you look at him and Jalen and you go, how good are they going to be 3 years from now? That's what gets me excited.
Yeah.
Right? And if you're going to say this is the core group, Dyson's young. Obviously, Kuminga's young. Jalen's young. Nikhil came here, and he's been a pleasant surprise, right, in his role. So it's just one of those things where I'm with you. I think the uptick for the team, as you said to Steve Coonan today, is heading in the right direction. Want to thank Steve for stopping by as well. We also talked to our buddy Joe Patrick today. All these interviews online. And we talked to BMAC, Bryant McFadden as well. You can check out all those interviews at Odyssey.com. All right, Chris has got a full four for you tonight. We're heading towards the weekend, guys. Coming back Monday, we've got Cynthia Freeland from NFL Network, who's going to join us on Monday. Mike's back as well. And then we're also going to talk to our buddy DJ Shockley. I'm curious to see what Shock has to say about these quarterbacks, our quarterback situation. We'll talk to him about Georgia and all of that. So make sure you're here on Monday at 2 o'clock. Abe, thanks for being here, filling in. Good luck on Sunday,
Thank you, by the way. Yes.
And hope you run a great time. All right?
Thank you.
Yeah, man. Good luck. All right. We got to get out of here and clear our throat. Hey, man, have a great weekend. Tinker, thanks for hanging out with us as always, man. Tink was like, I missed that event last week at Publix, man. I wish it would have came out. He had to work, but he's out here today, man. Cheers. Happy weekend to you. Gordon, G-Money, man, thank you. Our on-site engineer, as always. And Day-Day is on vacay next week. Enjoy your vacation, all right? And we will see you the following week when you get back. Hey, man, have a great weekend. Enjoy and join us Monday. Abe's back with the Midday Show. And, Abe, thanks again for being here. All right, Abe, you got to get out of here, man. Clear your throat.
Yeah, in solidarity with the NBA today, I'm going to be load managing. I'm taking tomorrow off of Atlanta United pre- and post-game to prepare for the marathon. Maddie and John Nelson will have you. But, look, I think Atlanta United's on to something here. I think it was a tough go in the first game, and I think there's a chance to really – make a big improvement. I look forward to tomorrow's game. I'm kind of back in on that team. Not as crazy as we were at the start of last year.
Okay.
Nothing over the edge there, but hopefully Alexi Maranchuk gets in back healthy, and I think tomorrow could be a result.
Hope so.
I got a feeling.
I hope so. San Jose, right here on Sports Radio 92.9 The Game. Abe usually hosts that pre and post. He will be out tomorrow because he's getting ready for his big run. Hey, raises handed out at Georgia. Bobo gets a raise. So does Glenn Schumann. I'm okay with it, and you should be too. You want to keep top assistants, and you got to pay to keep top assistants. This is the nature of college football. Let's not get caught up in what have you done for me lately. Georgia is one of, if not the most successful programs in college football. Part of that is keeping your guys. Kudos to Georgia for upping the ante. I have no issues with it, and you shouldn't either. Hey, man, if you love the show,
you tell your friends.
If you don't,
you'll be stuck coaching soccer 9-year-olds on a Monday night.
Here you go.